That's largely because of the work I'm doing with the Society of African Missions and the Our Lady of Apostles sisters as well. I mean, you have missionaries who have spent, you know, lifetimes in Africa, and they have seen over the last 30, 40 years the effects of climate change on poor communities. And so the SMAs and the OLAs have actually made climate justice a very, very important tenet of their future mission. And many men who've come home now are very much actively involved. But they will always point to the fact that the inspiration in Ireland in regard to this is Father Sean McDonough and Donald Dorr, like Columban and Kilteagan, who were way ahead of the posse, like, and were like John the Baptist for many, many years, like a voice crying in the wilderness. And people think that they were actually mad, whereas in fact we now know that these men were way ahead of their time.
They were prophetic, basically.
Very prophetic, very prophetic. And we owe them a great debt of gratitude, you know, for awakening us to the most serious issue facing humanity ever. I mean, I believe that we are the Genesis generation. We are the new Adam and Eves. It's not a matter of us subduing and conquering the earth. It's a matter we've got to become very humble and recognize that we have the potential now to destroy creation, or we can actually recover from this. But it's going to take a huge moral kind of change of attitude. It's going to, as Richard Bruton talked about, although I'm not quite sure what he means, it will actually take a revolution in terms of our lifestyles. But are we prepared in terms of what that means?
I mean, I was just going to ask you that because, I mean, the people you're talking about, they were working in Africa. They saw people who were living and being directly impacted by climate change. But in Ireland, we haven't been hit too badly. So people are either skeptical or just apathetic or just not willing to make that kind of revolution. I mean, I think, in fact, we were last in Europe in terms of our climate action. So we just don't look like the kind of nation that's going to step up to the mark.
No, we've escaped relatively unscathed. Perhaps 2018 might be a year we look back upon because we've had very heavy rains, which led to a fodder crisis for the first time in many, many years. Like, we had to actually bring fodder from outside to feed animals. And then we had this incredible drought. I took photographs in Dublin, like, of the Emerald Isle that was nearly desertified, you know, and it was strange. I mean, you could sit out in the garden swing until maybe 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning. Like, it was, you know, it was unreal, like, in terms of the climate that we're aware of. So there are signs that this is happening, but we also have a responsibility to look at how our lifestyles in the Northern Hemisphere, in the richer countries, are impacting on others. I mean, Sean McDonough points out that the amount of emissions that we are responsible for in Ireland, you know, is as much as the 400 million poorest people on Earth. That's huge. That's huge. And that's a huge moral responsibility. And we also need to look at other aspects of our lifestyle. I mean, the whole issue of beef, for example, not just in Ireland, but it's a very important tenet of our agricultural policy at the moment. And it's got to change. But I mean, beef is not only causing problems in terms of methane gas, but also in terms of the impact on land. And I mean, animals need to be fed. And the world population at the moment, 7.8 billion people. We're talking at possibly nearly 11 million by 2100. I mean, how are we going to survive unless we change the way that we interact with nature? And we're going to have to change our eating habits as well. And we've got to make a huge reduction in our beef consumption. Because for an acre of land in terms of producing beef, we could actually get far, far greater acreages in terms of vegetables and fruits and so on, you know, which is healthier for us as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's the great irony, isn't it? Beef isn't even particularly healthy for us. And yet 30%, and the figure that I had heard was that 30%, over 30% of our emissions, our greenhouse gas emissions, come from our agricultural industry. And a lot of that is down to the fact that we have very, very heavily pushed meat and dairy, the meat and dairy industry.
And this is all over. I mean, I read an amazing statistic that the soot produced from fast food outlets in Los Angeles is more per annum than their entire bus fleet. So that says something as well. So we just have to look at all of this. So I really think that the situation is so serious that all nations, but particularly Ireland, because this is what we're talking about at the moment, we need a dedicated minister for climate action. At the moment, our minister has three portfolios, which again shows that it's not really been taken all that seriously. Yes, Richard Bruton has come back from Katowice and COP24. Yes, he did go and he gave 4.7 million, I think it was, to various green projects, including the Great Green Wall, which the Society of African Missions has been very, very vocal in supporting, and we welcome that. But so much more needs to be done. And I think that one of the great signs that Ireland has taken this more seriously is that we have a dedicated minister for climate action that we all can work with, and that he can then begin to look in terms of how we must implement climate action plans right across the whole spectrum of the various policies that government's responsible for.
I mean, because the great tragedy in a sense is that we have the ability, we have the technology. I mean, we could transition away from beef and dairy. We could start retrofitting old houses and making them more efficient. We could bring in more public transport. Like, none of these things are outside of our capabilities.
No, and there's jobs, there's green jobs to be actually realised, you know, and people need to be supported. And there's a lot of green jobs that can be created. I would love if there was a way that we could actually get some kind of support from the government in terms of our own house, in terms of having it made more efficient in terms of the energy that we use. And surely there has to be ways.
Also looking at the moral issue of it and the Christian response to it. I mean, you're talking about us in Ireland, and the missionaries, Ireland have been renowned for being good all over the world, and yet suddenly on this issue we don't seem to see it as a moral issue, or we don't seem to see it as a Christian issue, or you don't tend to hear the church, apart from yourself and people like Sean McDonough, you don't really tend to hear the church talking about this issue.
Well, I mean, Sean McDonough is very strong in that this is a moral issue, and I mean, when the very future of humanity is at stake, when the very future of all life on earth is at stake, if it's not a moral issue, then what is it? I mean, we're actually, as I mentioned, the Genesis generation, because we have now the responsibility with regard to the survival of all life on the planet. If we don't keep global warming below 1.5 degrees, then we are looking at a catastrophe. We're literally sleepwalking into a nightmare, and my worry is that when we wake up, it will be too late. I mean, Sean McDonough points out that at the moment we're hurtling towards 3 to 4 degrees, and that's irreversible. After that, we've no control whatsoever, no control. And even Katowice told us we have 12 years to try and get this right. 12 years, it's nothing. So we need to wake up. We've got to come back into a life of consciousness, you know. And so that's where we need the church. And this is what is so disheartening, you know. The church at the moment has lost kind of its moral authority. And it only has itself to blame in terms of, you know, high churchmen putting the interests of the institution before the suffering of victims. That was appalling. That was appalling. And really, we've got to get this sorted out, you know, very quickly, even in terms of, like, a lot of the work that we and many, many people did for the World Meeting of Families. We, in terms of the SMA, had a wonderful climate action exhibition, which probably would have captured the imagination of a lot of the media. But what happened? 2 weeks before, we had all of this scandal coming out of the United States involving a high cardinal as well, and that became the issue. And of course, then that's all the media was interested in. And the media, of course, can become obsessed as well with particular issues. And there is an element of the media as well, likes to lambast and push the church into a corner. So I think that all of us have a responsibility. The church has to put this issue of zero tolerance with regard to child abuse, sexual abuse, all of that there, has to put it right so that it can then begin to speak and be heard respectfully in regard to big issues like climate action at the moment. But the media also, I think, has to wake up as well.
Yeah.
You know, the media has a responsibility. And I have to say, I felt that George Lee of RTE did really well in terms of his coverage of Katowice. And I think he was rightly very critical in terms of the government as well. And that is hopeful to see that.
The interesting thing, I suppose, about religion and morality is that, you know, a lot of these ideas of sustainability that we're now looking at as, you know, the revolution that we need, were actually often championed by holy people and saints way back when. You know, if you think of St. Francis or even John the Baptist, like, they all lived very simple lives in communion with nature.
Yes, and that's why I think it was wonderful when Pope Francis took the name of Francis of Assisi. I often think about this thing of Francis and holy poverty. There's nothing holy about poverty. Poverty is an evil. And poverty is a result of the unfair and unjust distribution of resources. And it's not God's will, and it is a moral issue. What Francis embraced was holy simplicity, and that's what we need. Next year, we will commemorate the 150th anniversary of the birth of Mahatma Gandhi. Again, if you look at Gandhi, he embraced great simplicity. And that's what we have to do. And we have to realize, you know, that there is great happiness and joy to be found in simplicity. That we don't need all of these distractions. I mean, I think of even my own childhood. We would spend hours and hours and hours in the local green kicking a football. And we would have had the imagination of wanting to be Bobby Moore or Gordon Banks or Pelé or whatever, you know. Whereas all of that has changed now. You don't see kids doing the same things anymore. Many of them are caught playing games like on their mobile phones. People don't even communicate anymore. Even on buses they don't talk because their heads are stuck into mobile phones. So we're losing a lot of our essential humanity, and we've got to go back to that. And I think that we have to also begin to discipline ourselves, including myself. Gandhi was the one who said, we must be the change we want to see. It begins with ourselves.